scripture that's called the Great Commission. It's at the very end of Matthew, and Patrick's going to lay it out for us tonight. So, Patrick, speak.
Can you do it from up there? Because I need to record it.
Oh, thank you.
People at home need to hear the scripture too. Our worldwide audience.
Can I go?
Go for it.
Comes from the 28th chapter of Matthew, it's verses 16 through 20. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, to the end of the world."
So I just want to give you guys permission to actually turn your seats if it's helpful, but if you're comfortable, do what feels good. Yeah, so this is the passage, like I said, called the Great Commissioning. And it's at the very end of the Gospel of Mark. It's also at the very end of Jesus' time on earth. So you've got the resurrection, it's happened. Jesus has spent a few weeks wandering around with the disciples. And right before he's getting ready to get taken away into heaven, he gives one last little bit of, like, wrapping it all up for everyone. Like, this is my farewell speech. This is, like, the most important stuff. This is what you do when I leave. And it's hard to do this because whenever you have all this pressure to actually, like, whittle down or kind of distill the very nub of, like, the most important thing, like, we often fall back on cliches. So, for example, I was at this graduation service at a church once, and these high school kids were beloved by the church, and they were graduating, and so the adults in the church were trying to, like, whittle down all of the wisdom that they needed to go to college and go on with their lives and, like, break it down into this really pithy, important spiel. But it ended up being atrocious. So what happened was, you know, we were in the sanctuary, there were, like, candle lights, it was really dim, and everyone was speaking in, like, really important kind of righteous tones to, like, instill this wisdom to these young people. And the last guy to talk, like, got into this really, like, somber, kind of whispery, breathy voice. And he said, "No matter what you come across, never, never, never give up your honor." And I was like, "What?" So I was cracking up because I was like, "This is ridiculous." But then other people in the crowd were like, "Oh yeah, yeah, don't give up that honor." You know, I'm like, "What is this even about?" So anyway, this is, like, kind of the scene that Jesus is in with the disciples, right? He's got to, like, whittle it all down, make it really clear, and, like, deliver the kind of knockout punch, and help the disciples move into this era that is post-Jesus, right? They've been living with him for all these years, 3 years, and now they've got to live life without him. So up to this point, the whole 3-year period of time when they were with Jesus, being a disciple was pretty easy. Like, what it meant to follow Jesus was pretty self-explanatory, right? So you've got Jesus would walk down the road and see these people sitting on the side and say, "Hey, come follow me." The people would come follow him. And so what it meant to be a follower of Jesus was to just walk around and go and see what Jesus did and just kind of follow this guy. Very easy. But what it meant to be a disciple had to change at this point. The old way of being a disciple wouldn't work whenever Jesus isn't there. So Jesus basically tells them, like, "I'm not going to be here forever. This is what you've got to do to follow me." He's reinterpreting what it means to follow Jesus in the post-Jesus era. So instead of walking around and following Jesus, which is what it did mean, now he says, "Go and make disciples of all nations." This is what's going to get them through once Jesus is gone. So this is a huge transition because you've moved from people who were passively receiving Jesus' teachings to now actively having to go out and make disciples of all nations. So in other words, the training wheels are off And if this movement is going to continue at all after Jesus leaves, then they're going to have to take some responsibility and make this happen. Now, Karan, our conversation at dinner is right up. Yeah, I appreciate that. So Christians have interpreted what it means to go and make disciples of all nations in a whole host of ways. Most of them have been bad. Yeah. Pretty bad, right? So I felt some nervousness out there, like, is he gonna say that this is what we need to do? No, I'm gonna play with it a little bit. So we've really messed this up, and so I want to talk about kind of what's happened with this idea of going and making disciples, because this is, again, this is the valedictory address. This is like the last teaching that Jesus gives us. So what do we do with it? I think the image that comes to mind when we think about making disciples of all nations is the missionary or mission work. And we can't help but hear that and not think about colonialism and this history of abuse of politics and religion kind of being in bed together. So for a lot of Christian history, missionary work was just colonialism. The two things were the same thing. So the image that you should have in your mind is of white European dudes waltzing through the Amazon with the Bible in one hand, probably a gun in the other, who find native tribes and try to convert them to the one true faith. So this was definitely what Christians thought this meant for a long time, and from like the 1500s at least until the present day, a lot of Christians have interpreted these words from Jesus as legitimation for their colonial intentions to exploit markets and foreign lands and to make people who look different than them look more like them, right? So mission, making disciples in this sense, was about conquering. And it's easy to kind of poke fun at those missionaries that do that kind of bad stuff, but I think it happens closer to home too. I think about Mormon missionaries who waltz along and have their little black ties and their white shirts, and they're not conquering peoples and local inhabitants of a place, but they are, I don't know if you've ever encountered people that are doing mission work in that type, but it feels invasive, like there's still some sort of conquering mentality, like your heart is the mission field that's meant to be conquered. And there's this kind of invasive and imposition that happens, and it just doesn't feel right. So I want to say that there's some serious problems with the way that Christians have tried to make disciples, even though they were just trying to do what Jesus said. They were just trying to interpret what this last teaching was. But I want to be clear about what the problems are with these. So first, if mission work is about conquering, whether it's conquering people by colonizing them or by trying to win over hearts in this kind of really intrusive way, I believe that the missionary is failing to hold up what is basically the number one rule of being a good person, which is to respect the integrity of other people, right? Like, there's nothing to be gained by forcing stuff on people or by forcing them to believe something that they don't. Like, that's not making disciples, right? And I think Jesus is a good example of this because he did a lot of talking and conversing and interacting with people, but never once was this forceful. He didn't plunder any markets the way that these colonialist missionaries tried to do. And I think that God gave all of us brains to think for ourselves, to make sense of the world in a way that feels right to us. And so if someone comes and imposes a different way of thinking that doesn't have any resonance at all, then that does not sound like a healthy, godly kind of what Jesus meant when he was saying, let's make disciples of all nations. So second, too, there's this problem with missionaries, with the missionary mentality, when the goal is to convert people for your own gain. So a lot of the missionary mentality is about going out and kind of checking off like marks on your report card, kind of like this is what it means to do to be a good missionary, to be a good Christian means to like bring people to Jesus. And then you're committing crime number two against being a good person, which is to treat people like tools to get you to some sort of heavenly reward. There's a kind of, it's an instrumentalizing of human beings. And so for both of these reasons, I think that this interpretation is really bad. Hope that's clear. Okay, so Jesus is not asking us to be a colonizer, and he's not asking us to make people instruments for our kind of eternal glory. Are those About the two that you think that this person today was after?
Very much.
That's right? Okay, good. So I'm not making a straw man here. This is real. This happened to Karan on the street today at the Puerto Rican Day Parade. So, so this is a relevant sermon. So in that case, so okay, that's fine. So it's not those things, but what is like, what does this mean then? How are we to interpret these last, most important kind of final oomph from Jesus? And specifically, what does it mean for us at Root and Branch, who say we're in this tradition that follows Jesus and takes Jesus seriously, not literally, but seriously? And what does it mean for us here in Chicago? I think that's an open question. So, what does it mean to make disciples? Disciple is student or pupil, right? And students ask good questions. And so I'm going to try this out. I want you to think with me on this, but I'm going to say that to be a disciple, to make disciples, is to make our lives into living questions in a way that I think Jesus actually was getting at with this great commissioning. So Jesus was all about questions. He questioned the legitimacy of the Roman imperial rule. He questioned religious leaders about their interpretation of what God wanted for God's people. And he got his disciples to start asking questions about what kind of world and what kind of lives they wanted to live. He got them to think about what kind of world and what kind of lives they could be living. So Jesus didn't impose any crazy colonialist oppressive scheme on people. He didn't conquer them and plant a flag on their hearts as like a notch on the report card. He asked questions. He told stories. But the whole purpose of these questions and these stories and these parables and these teachings, I think, was to get these disciples to start thinking and asking the right questions about their own lives. He wanted to get them to start asking these big picture ultimate questions like, who am I? What am I doing here? What is the purpose of this life? What kind of society should we be creating and living in? So when Root and Branch says, and we do say this, that our mission is not to give out answers, to not like propagate doctrine and tell you what the answers to these big questions are, we mean it. And I think that's in line with what Jesus is after here. And when we say instead that our mission is to get ourselves to start asking these big questions together in community with others, I think that we are doing something that's very much in line with what Jesus is telling his disciples, to make disciples of all nations. And I think that by asking these questions, we're actually being transformed and redeemed. And what does that mean? So I think that when we ask these questions like, who am I? What is my purpose? Where am I from? Like, what is all this about? We're actually implicitly confessing something very faithful. It's a faithful work, because when I stop and say, okay, Andrew, who am I really? Like, what is the essence of Andrew Patman? If anybody has an answer for that, take care of them.
Just be Whole Foods.
Whole Foods. Bourgeois lifestyle. But when I stop and ask that, my implicit acknowledgement is that the person that I am right now may not be who I really am. The person that I am right now doesn't determine the person I could be, the person that God might see me to be. So to ask questions too, like, what kind of community should we be creating here, I think is to implicitly recognize that there are other ways to live than the one we're currently in right now. Basically, as long as we keep asking these big questions, we're implicitly saying that there are better answers to these big questions than the ones that we've found so far. And we have to do that, you have to hope that that's true, that those answers are real. And I think that this ties into Root and Branch's mission to be transformed, for all of us to be transformed from consumers of culture and church into creators of culture and church. You know, Root and Branch has three visions. We're hoping to be transformed from strangers to neighbors, from consumers of church to creators of church, and from lonely wanderers to communal seekers. These are the kind of transformations that we're judging ourselves by. And I think especially pertinent today is this transformation from consumers of culture and church to creators. To ask questions about the culture around us and how the church has always been done is to hope that it could be done differently, it could be done better, and that the society we live in could be more just and more meaningful and more compassionate. We don't have to stay the same, and our world doesn't have to stay the same, and I think, and I hope, that our church communities don't have to stay the same. So the point here, I think, is that, and I think Jesus is getting at this, is that human beings and human communities are radically questionable. We can always pose the question to ourselves, are we living the fullest and most vibrant, rich self that there is of us? I think that's a question that we should ask, and that is, it's grounded in a question about, are we living this life in a way that God recognizes us as the person that God hopes us to be? Like, what is it we can be working towards in that way? But we have to do that. To do this, we have to move from consumer to creator. We need to dig in our heels and question everything as we strive and pray and hope that something better is possible. I think that's what Jesus is commissioning his disciples to do, to stop just following him around and kind of like rote machines just doing what he does, and to go out and do this new thing, to make disciples, and this is my last point, to do it in your own way. I think this, making disciples of all nations in your own way, is especially where the colonialists go wrong. They thought that making disciples meant taking white, European, Christian stuff and forcing people who are not white or European or Christian into this white, European, Christian way. And I think, first off, as I've said, this is a moral failure, but I think it's really at heart a failure of the imagination. And I think that's what Jesus is trying to get at here. Instead of this colonial mentality, I think that the way to think about making disciples is better, is more analogous to a jazz ensemble. So this is actually an example from a professor at school, so I have to credit Kevin Hector for this. But so in jazz, if you've ever seen jazz, I hope you have. Silly question. The music starts with a kind of theme or phrase. And so the first musician will play some little phrase that carries on throughout the whole song in some way. But the next person, so once the pianist finishes her part and kind of does this riffing and kind of playing on this theme, the next person, the guy on the, I don't know, the trumpet or whatever, takes the same theme but makes it his own, right? He doesn't play something new in terms of like a new song. It's still recognizable as the same song, but it's got his own stamp on it. It's in the same trajectory, but it's now his own. And so I think that when musicians do this, they're asking questions of the music in the way that I'm saying we should be asking questions of our lives. So a musician who like hears this theme going on, he's like, okay, that's cool, but couldn't it be like this? Or what if I took this direction and like tried it on a different way? Or what if I just completely changed the tonal structure and tried to until it like broke down into this beautiful cacophony that no one who started in this jazz ensemble could have imagined was going to happen when they started? Because all they had was this original theme, this original phrase. But at the end of it, it's this thing that can't be recreated, but it's beautiful and shocking and amazing. I think that Christianity is like this too. There's this basic theme of loving your neighbors, of living in a world that is beheld by God with love. And then each of us, in our communities and in conversation with people that are very different than us, try to find our little own interpretations of this. It's still the same song, but it's done with our own unique stamp about it. And I think that this is what I hope Root and Branch is about. I hope this touches down here. I think that this is what it means to make disciples in the way that Jesus is talking about. So at Root and Branch, we're strict that no one imposes any understanding, anything, on anybody else. There's no flag planting done here. There's no colonialism. We're anti-colonialism, we hope. But instead of that, we are trying to, I think, form something like a Christian jazz ensemble or a community of questioners who are holding Christianity to be questionable, this thing that we can push each other through to ask big questions and to constantly be reflecting on whether the life we're living is measuring up to our fullest and most vibrant self. And I think that the hope for this, that we're starting with just a theme, just a kind of basic outline of what Christianity is, but through this kind of back and forth, this ensemble performance, and breaking some rules and trying some new ways and asking questions of it, that we can form a community that the world hasn't seen yet. that is doing religion and doing politics and doing life with one another in a way that is remarkable and beautiful, that everyone can find themselves in some way that's not imposed. So that is what I think it means to make disciples, this question asking. So as we, I want to break up into groups, so if you guys, maybe two per table or something, just kind of break up. And the first question I want to say is, what is a time when you've encountered a question that kind of drove you into, what's a better way to say that? I had these written out. What's a time when you've experienced someone who's asked you a question about your life and you've had to really take stock about, like, wait, is this really what this is about? Am I really, is this who Andrew really is? And it was kind of life-giving, and it kind of transformed the way you thought about yourself, and you maybe made some changes and, like, moved in a different direction. That's one. And the second one, and maybe just as important, is what do you imagine the mission of Root and Branch is? Like, considering these kind of things we've talked about, going and making disciples, kind of creating this jazz ensemble of improvisation, how do you see that working out here, and what could Root and Branch be? So let's take like 7 or 10 minutes to spend on that.